BFM 89.9, this is The Incident Room with me, Shifa Situ. Now, today, in support of the Nutgraf's public lecture series called Found in Conversation, we're going to focus on creativity and innovation in design. With me to shed light on this matter is Yayasan Tuanku Nur Zahira chairperson, Suryani Senja alias, who uses innovation in design to revive the Malaysian Songket weaving industry. And also with me is Lillian Tay, principal with Veritas Architects, whose work centers on the theme of dematerialization and anti-monumentalism. I'm going to latch onto the word monumentalism for a moment. I mean, monuments, the definition of monuments, rather, are symbols, you know, erected to commemorate the past, an historic event, or a person who's died. Now, the Songket, in many ways, is also a symbol of our past and of our heritage. Now, whilst coming from different disciplines, both of you deal with evolving art forms which represent both the past and the present and hopefully the future. So we're talking about innovation. I'm going to start with you, Lillian. Now, the size, significance and use of momentous buildings has been a hot topic of late. Do you think the Malaysian populace has tired of such grandiose symbolism which, you know, these buildings allude to?
Well, I think it's not just Malaysia, but, you know, we would learn the lesson from Dubai as well, which has been building many icons, some now unfinished. I think a city do need icons. They're very powerful. They have very powerful branding tools. And the way the Petronas Towers has put us on the map, the global map, I think one could never imagine KL would have transformed itself today. And that is the power of an icon. But I think we don't need too very many of them. And one is probably quite sufficient for the city. And there are a lot of other, obviously, I think that's what everyone is unhappy about, is that there are a lot of many other areas that we could still do a lot of work on.
So it's more a sense of priorities rather than the actual thing itself.
I think also the good thing about the Petronas Towers, for instance, is really not so much the buildings itself, but what it did, what it brought to the city of Kuala Lumpur, which is a new park, a concert hall, the Petronas Gallery, among others. So it's not just the icons themselves, which is not very accessible, yeah, to the public, except for the bridge, and that was sort of an afterthought, if I may say so. So the public had something to gain from the whole KLCC development. To be honest, I haven't seen the whole master plan yet. So we hope that there is also that level of contribution to the public.
All right, Suryani, I mean, the Songket, of course, is also steeped in, you know, history and tradition. And we're talking about innovation. Innovation is, you know, improving upon an old idea, like you have the iPod improving on the Walkman. I mean, what do you do to make sure that the Songket design or how does it remain fresh and sort of relevant to like a modern day consumer?
I think the Songket, it has like centuries of tradition, and it's not that much different actually when you look at current textiles in terms of when you look at patterns, texture and color. And we actually delve into the past when we look at Songket, because really when you want to see which direction you want to go towards for design, you have to look back. Someone, you know, has said that in order to know where you're going, you have to look at where you come from. So we start from there. And how we introduce innovation in Songket is that we first look into the history and how it has evolved by a diverse source of supply of raw materials. For example, yarns were brought in from India, from China. The gold threads were brought in from India. And then some of the traditions were brought in from Cambodia, from Thailand.
So globalization was real even back then.
Even back then. And so we learn from that. And from the meanings of the patterns, we also learn why they were there. And we apply that in innovation, because the patterns, even centuries ago, the patterns and colors came about because Songket weavers were weaving in a courtyard of a palace or in the gardens. So the patterns became plants or animals from that they could see from outside the window or
but
in
so
the East Coast.
Is the design changing now? Do we see like skyscrapers in Songket design?
Well, we see Puchok Rebong buildings. So Puchok Rebong is a very old. we see Puchok Rebong. It's a very, very common Malay design, and it has appeared in Songket for centuries. And it's the inspiration from flora and fauna applied to design, whether it's Songket or a textile or buildings. So it's a very general principle or fundamental principle that has, you know, that has been applied in the evolution of design, whether textiles or buildings. Mm. So what we do now in injecting innovation, we see how we see our contemporary culture. And what we see around us, what kind of colors do we see around us, what kind of flora and fauna and, you know, sort of geometric type patterns we see around us, and we apply that to.
So it's always evolving Songket. And changing.
It is always evolving
but
and changing.
But is there sort of a school of thought that's much more, you know, kind of a purist, you know, preserving the history as like a, almost like a fixed image? I mean, is there other people who are resistant to these kind of changes?
Definitely. Mm. For example, the classical Songket structure is that you have the kepala, which is the head, and you have the badan, which is the body. So the kepala is supposed to display the splendor of the Songket. For purists, a Songket is not a Songket if you don't have the body clear, and the body has to be flanked by the head has to be flanked by the two panels of the bodies. So if you don't have that, it's not Songket or it's not sarong.
You're breaking the rules.
You're breaking rules. So they're definitely purists. And for example, you can't have a peacock on the, you know, on the Songket. You can draw something else on the Songket, or you don't have a person on the Songket because they used to just use, you know, flowers and or other patterns on the Songket. Mm. So there are purists out there, but I don't think that would detract from the beauty of evolution on creativity, because there will always be different camps on how innovation should look like.
True.
Yeah, and I don't think you should be bound by that.
All right, now returning to you, Lillian, I mean, you're talking about, you know, history, and, you know, you have this so-called anti-monumentalism. I mean, but by anti-monumentalism, do you mean anti-history? I mean, do you look at design as something that should happen on a blank canvas without, you know, referring back to the past? I mean, what's your hang-up with these monuments?
Well, I wouldn't say that I've been, you know, anti-monumental or, you know, anti-monuments. I think there is a place for monuments in our society. There's a place for monuments in our rituals. You know, there's some need for it, I think, in a basic psyche. It's just to, I think my point perhaps had been, we have to have it in the right place, at the right time, in the right amount, maybe, for the right use. And I think it has to be justified, it has to work. We can't just have too many monuments for the sake of having.
They lose their significance as well, I guess, with too many of them. Mm. I mean, I know you have a particular interest or fascination for the architecture of Putrajaya. What is it about it that fascinates you? And what is it about the architecture of Putrajaya that sort of, what does it say about Malaysia? Or what does it say about the people and the time that from which it came?
Well, we've done quite a bit of work in Putrajaya, not in the initial planning, doing mainly the architectural work, but of course it's always very closely connected to the urban design. There are a lot of great things about Putrajaya in the sense that it was one of these mega projects, and it gave Malaysians a great opportunity to build a city from scratch. Never would we have this such an opportunity. And it gave Malaysian professionals, like, you know, architects, engineers, really good opportunity to enhance the skill, you know, innovation, design skills all needed to be built. And I think that was one of the most valuable part of the whole event of Putrajaya. Having said that, you know, of course, one always questions whether it's wise to build a standalone city, which is sort of, you know, singularly serving only one main function, which is purely administrative. We've seen from many examples in the world.
Like Canberra and...
Yes, Canberra, Brasilia, which are all sort of ideal cities, but they just don't have the life because it takes a lot of time to build a certain richness and depth into any city. And it's not easy to just, you know, build a city from scratch in such a short time as we did Putrajaya.
So. But do you think that in the future it might sort of grow organically and have, you know, compensate for the lack in some areas, and it might become more of a real city, you know?
Well, you know, it will take time. I think all cities take time to you know, grow and mature, you know, and be rich and satisfying cities to live in.
Mm-hmm.
It will take quite a bit of time. It needs a lot of things, a mix, the right mix of people, the right mix of businesses, and it's not just the physical place. Of course, there are some, in my view, there are certain you know, flaws or priorities in the master plan that we had to live with as designers coming later, and that is that that's where that monumentality comes from. But for the, you know, it works really well on Merdeka Day, you know, when you have the parades. That boulevard is a fantastic place, and that's what it was meant to be.
So the city is made for a parade.
Well, I think the central boulevard is at its best use when it's used for a parade.
All right, I'm talking to Lillian Tay, Principal of Veritas Architects, and Yayasan Tuanku Nur Zahira, Chairperson Suryani Senja Alias, on innovation and creativity in design. Do let us know what your thoughts are by tweeting us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned to the Incident Room here on BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the Incident Room with me, Shifa Situ. I'm here with Lillian Tay, Principal of Veritas Architects, and Yayasan Tuanku Nur Zahira, Chairperson, Suryani Senja Alias. Now, before the break, Lillian, you spoke about the monumentalism in Putrajaya. Now, in your own work and, you know, the work that you love to do, what are the factors that sort of influence you in creating buildings? What is it that tells you how it should be and how it should operate?
Well, I think, you know, building, like, unlike a piece of standalone work of art, has to serve a purpose, you know, it has to stand up. So there's a lot of due diligence that just needs to be done. And then, of course, the extra imperative on us as architects and designers on it is to give it a life beyond just a pile of bricks or steel and glass. You know, to make a delightful space that, you know, uplifts people. And I think that's the extra layer that is our responsibility as an architect. Otherwise, a building could be done by a builder, a contractor, or anyone could.
But do we see examples of these buildings being produced in Malaysia at the moment? And what do you see as the most you know, stellar examples of that kind of conscious building?
Well, there is a lot of talent and skill in Malaysia, but we also are suffering a great loss of a lot of them. You know, we've lost many of our good designers, not just, you know, to all over the world. You know, in my company, we've lost, our architects were headhunted by other firms in Britain, in, you know, in China.
I mean, which
Singapore.
Is great, in a way, it's a great credit, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a great credit to Malaysians. I think it's proof that we are not short of talent. Our challenge is really retaining talent, because we need to keep them here to, you know, do things, a lot of things that still needs to be done. And I think another challenge that we face in terms of building more space for creativity and innovation is also on the side of the patrons and clients. That is perhaps even the larger challenge. Mm. As you can see, many, many of the buildings in Malaysia, which are the, you know, the big buildings, iconic ones, many times we as Malaysian designers don't even get a chance to be, you know, the opportunity to design them.
Mm.
They are sort of given wholesale to another big name architect globally.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real need to create more opportunities for Malaysian talent to grow, so that we would really be one Malaysia, you know, number one, as in excellent.
That's perfect.
Because sometimes, you know, I sort of feel like there are some very many cases where we are like, oh, second class.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the talent. I mean, in the Songket weaving sort of, I mean, it's more of a cottage industry at the moment, but is there sort of that talent being stimulated and built? And what are you guys doing to ensure that people have the skills?
That's a really good point, because we were facing a lot of challenges in getting very skilled and talented weavers. But we found that, strangely enough, because even though there are actually about over 2,000 weavers in the East Coast itself, most of them stopped weaving because they were not getting much money. It's too hard, you know. It requires a lot of concentration and focus. It's mm-hmm. actually almost mathematical in terms of like translating patterns into weaving. But we found that when we created a better environment for them to work and better facilities and better incentives like fixed salaries with EPF, SOXO, overtime, bonus, we actually found that a lot of young people wanted to do it. The big difference between Yayasan Tuanku Zahira's production centres and the other sort of weaving setups around the villages is that our weavers are mainly under 30 years old, who otherwise would be unemployed. Mm. Or they would be in the category of unemployable. You know?
I hate that term. Right?
Yeah. So, but these girls, because all of them are girls, these girls grew up in the weaving tradition. A lot of them grew up in either weaving villages or grew up in weaving families, and they take to it very easily, and they're very talented. It's just that they don't see it as a good job.
So if you finally sort of appreciate the talent and give them, you know, basic rights and which other workers have, it's actually not.
Yeah, compared to factory jobs, you know, which is like kind of backbreaking, and you have to move away from your village because most of them do not want to actually, migrate to KL.
Yeah, I mean, it means backbreaking and soul destroying, really.
Yes, that's right. And you know, there's a lot of social problems with the rural urban migration as well. So we find that once you actually create the right environment, talents will come.
I mean, I know it operates currently as sort of a trust kind of model, but that a new innovation is apparently on the way, and you're thinking of moving it towards more sort of social enterprise business model.
That's right. I mean, even when we started, Yayasan Tuanku Zahira is supposed to promote and preserve heritage, and one of the issue is sustainability. If we stop at grants and donations, or we create that dependency on grants and donations, it's not going to last very long, and it will never expand the way we want it to expand, and it will never provide the opportunities to artisans the way we want it to. So we're actually moving towards spinning it off into a social enterprise, but that would operate as a business, but we'll have the employees as stakeholders, and we would develop it as a business, but with social objectives at the same time, which is not new. Actually, it's not. It's an innovation probably in Malaysia, because we don't have that many, or none, I think, if I can think of right now. And we were surprised ourselves that once we contemporize craft and made it friendly and made it attractive to, you know, a wider range of people in Malaysia as well outside of Malaysia, it sells.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Okay, now, Lillian, I mean, in terms of the architecture side of innovation, I mean, what is the key innovations that are happening in architecture in Malaysia today? I mean, there's a lot of talk, for example, around, you know, this whole green, environmental-friendly buildings. I mean, are these just, you know, catchphrases? Is there a serious effort for this to happen? I mean, what do you see as sort of the changes that are happening?
Well, I think an architect's work is always about innovation, so there's constantly innovation going on. I wouldn't say itself that the green agenda is an innovation. It's actually a necessity today. We realize that more, and it's an ethic in a way. And it's just that we now begin to put more value on it. And there have been many architects doing green architecture a long time
ago,
back in the 60s as well. You know, it sort of goes with the sort of social values, you know, that have cyclical.
But what are other social values or ethics that are, you know, coming into play more? You talked about, you know, environment, but, you know, you talk about maybe more human scale matters, the environment they're in, public transport, those kinds of concerns. I mean, what do you see?
Well, I think one positive thing is that I think I see a shift, you know, in values towards more important things, like just the fact that people are more interested now in the green movement means they are more conscious of the need to not be wasteful about our natural resources. These are a return to very good, decent, old-fashioned and necessary values. perhaps that also means that that's a sort of a move away from, you know, the sort of more extravagant, indulgent values of the 80s that and going on to the 90s.
This is the credit crunch kind of...
It's the post-financial crisis sort of values, whether it's by necessity or by choice, but it's a good direction. And we should build on it. And, you know, as I said, it shouldn't just be a trend again. We should actually sort of look at it as an ethic that we have embraced.
All right, we're coming to the end of the session. And I'd just like to ask you both to comment on what you see as the necessary or sort of key factors needed to ensure innovation in your respective fields. Maybe, Suryani, you could go first.
Key factors.
Yeah, I mean, sort of enabling factors that, you know, you talk about talent, you talk about, you know, environment,
recognition. Yeah. Yeah. Right here. At
reward, definitely. Yeah, yeah, reward. And the freedom to create. You need to create a lot of spaces for people. I mean, whether you're in a company or you're in government or you're in an organization, you have to actually consciously create spaces for people to express themselves. And I think that's key. That's really fundamental. Because sometimes it's, I think right now, maybe it's moving towards a better direction, but Malaysians, I think, sometimes tend to be very prescriptive. You have to do this in this way, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So people stop thinking. So create more spaces for people to express themselves.
Well, similarly, more opportunity for, you know, young talent and even, and especially also for local talent, young and old, to have more opportunity to grow the talent, enhance it, and take it to the next level. It's really necessary because I think the basic skills are there, but it's the mindset change, not on the side of the designers, but the, you know, the on the side of the patrons, the clients, and the consumers. And really recognize that there could be a lot of local talent that's very good, and that's
actually public competition. I think is lacking in Malaysia for things like public sculptures and
that's right. The Vari Samar Deka should have been a national public
and all those weird flowers and that we see or weird animals and flowers that we see in our runabouts. I
love those.
I really think that there should be more public art competitions to open up to the best, you know, to the best talent, to provide our public spaces with really beautiful
contemporary
and relevant art pieces or sculpture.
That was Lillian Tay, principal of Veritas Architects. You also heard from Suryani Senya Alias from Yayasan Tuanku Nur Zahira. I'm Shifa Situ, and this has been The Incident Room here on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.